Is Data a blessing or a curse? Brought to you by Adastra, this is a must-listen podcast that inspires and advises people who are serious about digitalization. What's personalization? What exactly does personalization mean and what is it not? How can we break the silos between IT and business when it comes to personalization? I'm gonna talk about all of this today with Rasmus Holin, Chief Experience Officer at Agilic. Rasmus, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ivana. Thank you for having me.
Let's start with the definition. What's personalization?
I'm slightly afraid of answering that because that's kind of what the whole book that I wrote is about. So you can indeed write books about that. And to begin with, when we wrote the book, Hello First Name, I was under the belief that we needed a common definition for the word personalization as well, and that would somehow help marketers get to a better place. So I started really digging into that, and we did multiple roundtable sessions also in the Nordics, and a lot of, and I almost have 20 years of experience. So over the years, I've been through some personalization projects, and I think that the issue with personalization, and also what sort of drove me into writing a book about it, was that there are so many different perceptions of the word. So many people are using the word, but they're meaning different things. So they are, some are talking about product recommendations, some are talking about hello first name, salutation personalization in direct mails, and some are talking about marketing automation, some are talking about personalized campaigns and so on. So there are so many different versions of it. And really the definition of it, and if you think about like a real sort of academic written description, it's very, very broad. But I think it there is one in the book, and it's something about using the insights that you have with your customers, whether it's on their preferences, what they would like to, what they wouldn't like to, what they're interested in, and trying to match that up with the right message for them, what you think would be interesting for them, what would make their day better, what would, according to you, assumably move them to a better place faster.
Okay.
So not giving everybody the same treatment, but one you think is better based on the
insights. I remember using insights, and I think we will talk about that much more later on. So what is personalization not about?
Yeah. So there's a lot of discussion about when is something proper personalization. Some would argue that if you're sort of only doing a broad segmentation of your customer database and sending maybe one message to female and one to male people in the customer database, they would say that isn't personalization. I would argue that it is, actually, because it's a matter of, how many segments you have. At some point, it becomes very granular, and then it's basically the same. So even though it's still segmentation, you get this personalized customer experience. So basically, any kind of customer experience that you're giving customers that isn't the same for everybody, sort of personalization.
So if I send an email, hello, Ivana, is the personalization, right?
It is.
Even from your perspective?
Even from my perspective, yeah. I would agree that it doesn't necessarily become personal just because, we receive a lot of emails with our name in, and as soon as we open them, we see that it's not personalized, apart from the name putting in it. So we don't feel it as something personal. So there's a distinction between personal and personalization. So personalization is when the companies are trying to make content more applicable to the individual by looking at the insights that they have on them. So what is not personalization? That is often when you are doing like really broad campaigns, branding campaigns. So I think there's a time for being personal and doing personalization. There's also a time for talking about yourself and talking about your brand.
So this can be like, can I imagine like an email which I receive from my bank informing me about the latest stuff, which I'm completely not interested to?
Yeah.
This is what's not personalization, right?
Yeah, that could be it. Yeah, if they just send the exact same email, inside out about what's going on in the bank, not paying any attention to what interests people have, that's definitely not personalization. That's the opposite. So as soon as you're in a place where you're saying everything to everybody all the time, then you're too far from personalization.
Okay, if you do not call it personalization, what can we call it? Bothering the people?
Yeah, so alcohol spam.
Okay, yeah, alcohol
or
spam.
Annoying people. Or as I just mentioned, there's also the point of, you know, like if you don't have any data on your customers and you don't know them, and your brand is not very well known and so on, then you'd be doing big branding campaigns, which would be telling the world the story about your brand and how it came to be and what your value proposition is. And that's generally not personalized, but that's also okay because, I mean, if you don't know anyone, then you need to start the conversation by talking about yourself.
Yeah, so it can be, but it can be okay from like the marketing goal perspective, right?
Exactly, yeah. So I'm just to say that I don't think personalization is the one thing to, you know, it's not the perfect hammer for every nail out there. I'm sometimes you need a screwdriver. So pick your tools.
If as we were talking about a high Ivana personalization,
yeah.
Tell me, why so many companies use this particular approach? I mean, really personalize the first name, but the rest of the email is not relevant.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's probably the oldest form of personalization that there is. So there was a German guy called Siegfried Vögler, who's kind of the grand old man within, he's dead now, unfortunately, but he's the grand old man of direct marketing. And he is, in his works, he's describing sort of these questions that arise when you get, for instance, a mail in the letterbox. And the first one is it for me? And then second one is it relevant? Is it worth my time? And these small questions arise. And until you, I mean, if you get a yes and a yes and a yes and a yes, that's all good. But as soon as you get a no, then you're off. And I think putting people's first name in the salutation, so you actually show that you know people.
Yeah, you get a first yes.
Yeah, then you get the first yes. But then if the rest of the email, for instance, isn't personalized at all, then you quickly get a no. or you're lucky. I mean, there's also the chance of, I mean, when you're doing really broad campaigns, some will find it super relevant because you hit them right there at the right time. But it was a random chance. It wasn't an act of personalization. So, and the reason that they're not doing it more and not taking it further is quite often because of data issues. So data integrations and not having the data in place, or maybe not knowing how to personalize, or not having the resources or the skills to do it, or the right software tools also could be the case.
Or how to use the data they already have.
Yeah, that could definitely be the case. So, I mean, just because you have data, it doesn't mean that it is converted into insights. I mean, you can have poor data. So if you have data issues, data quality issues, if you don't have enough data, if you have the wrong data, and if you're not able to interpret the data, then, I mean, that those could be challenges that you need to solve.
Okay, before we get to your favorite topic, to the bow tie in the terms of personalization, just stay for a while with the data.
Mm-hmm.
What should be the framework that a business should cooperate with IT or another department having the data to really be able to do the proper personalization from your perspective?
I think it has to start with looking into which sort of personalized use cases do you want to build for your company? And then doing some kind of math on that, saying, okay, so if we were able to personalize the way that we treat customers through the trial period of a customer relationship, for instance, how many more customers would we expect that we could then retain as opposed to just doing what we're doing already? So if we had all the data that would be needed for doing this kind of welcome program, trial flow, conversion program that we want, how many extra subscribers would that gain us and how much money would that amount to? So doing that calculation, going back to IT and saying, listen, if only we had this data, we could be making this kind of money.
Okay, so you suggest to start from the end.
Yeah, basically.
How much money will we make?
Exactly. So start with the business case. Do the business case up front. And don't think about it as exact science, but just to put things into perspective. Because as soon as you get out of the marketing department, people will not understand what you're saying if you're talking about conversion rates and views and engagements and trials and blah, 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 blah. But everybody understands the language of money.
Yeah, the impact.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, at least you're... I mean, people will be looking weird in a job interview if they didn't understand the language of money. So start with money. That's what everybody can understand. So, and that also makes it easier to prioritize projects across, because IT will be having, you know, questions from multiple parts of the company. Yeah, sure. I mean, we can deliver this data to you, and we don't argue that it's a good idea to do personalization, but we need to prioritize this against 10 other things that is on the list. And it's really hard to, I mean, to justify that in marketing lingo alone. You need to justify that with money so they can actually make the prioritizations. That will also make it easier for you to, I mean, for instance, if you want to get the help from an agency like Adestra, if you did the math and you can see how much money could we make from this, quite often there's room enough for, you know, both getting the data dug out from the IT department and hiring an agency, and actually also maybe getting the right software tools such as Agilic, where I work. I mean, even covering that. If you do the math all the way to the money, that's where I would start, because that brings the whole project on a better.
What are your personal experience with companies when you try to, or they try to get the marketing and the data department or IT department on one page? What are the largest obstacles?
Yeah, first of all, it's getting the priority. I mean, and it relates directly back to what we just spoke about.
Money.
Yes, man, to get your project prioritized. So quite often the IT departments have a backlog that sort of, I mean, they never get to the bottom of the list of stuff they need to do, right? So you need to give them the arguments for putting your thing on top. And doing the business case can be one way of doing that. What could happen then is that you could be, that could come back to you and say, yeah, that's very fine, but we don't believe the business case. Or, I mean, have you justified this? What is the background of your calculations for the ROI? And that's the thing that you then need to justify with maybe your CEO or your CMO, depending on how high you are in the company. And again, getting help from, you know, cases and, you know, maybe agencies or clients in the industry, in your network or whatever, that have done something similar would give you an indication that could justify these accounts, kind of the areas of improvements and the effect that we can expect. That will help justify that. And maybe also what I've seen work is if you are, dramatizing the ideal customer journey. So if our customer journey were like this, and what does like this mean? So, I mean, you make a small story, like a narrative, where a potential customer or a future customer is going through a customer journey and everything is working fantastically because of personalization. So those two things.
So you visualize some kind of ideal journey and ideal business case.
Yeah, because that travels much better than your graphs. so if you dramatize it, maybe in a small cartoonized video, or so, just to say, this is the vision that we're aiming for. This is the vision of how we'd like our future customer journeys to be, and this is the calculation that backs it up. This is what we could be making. Then you have a pretty strong point for getting your project prioritized.
Yeah, so if I understand you well, what you are trying to say is, and just correct me if I'm wrong, calculate your business impact.
Yeah.
Get the yes from the management to be able to prioritize the case by IT department, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mentioned the Bowtie framework on concept you work with. Can you just explain what does it mean, bowtie in personalization?
Yeah, so the bowtie of personalization is a concept that I came up with when writing the book, and it's really about it boils down to taking the definition of what personalization is, and as I mentioned before, it's very broad, but there's also a core to it. And the core is, how do you match your insights, your customer insights, together with the content that you have? That's at the heart of personalization. And we just found that the bow tie is actually a good metaphor for that, or a bow for that matter. It doesn't have to be a bow tie. And the thing is that if you have your insights in one end and you have your content in the other end, then tying it together really is a beautiful metaphor for how you should make a how you could personalize each moment of truth within a customer journey. And so the bow tie is, you know, it's two ends. You have the insights in one end, and you have the content in the other. And the insights consist of your customer segments, which is like fairly static group of customers, and it consists of your moments of truth, which is a metaphor for what's going on in the customer life cycle right now. It's built on behavioral data. Who just left something in the shopping basket? We all know that.
So this is the moment of truth. I wanted to buy, but didn't finish.
Exactly, yeah. Or my trial subscription is expiring, or my credit card is expiring, or I didn't go to the gym for 2 weeks, or, you know, I'm considering to cancel my subscription or whether to renew it, or all these moments of truth in the customer lifecycle. So segments and moments of truth, those are two types of insights. And that constitutes actually one end of the bow tie, whereas the other end, that would be your content. And quite often, I think the content side is neglected because we have so many issues with getting the data right. And it's not until you have the data right that you realize, okay, wow, we have nothing to say, or we don't have any content, or we don't know how to do the match, which is actually a metaphor for tying the knot in the bow tie. So the content can be either your messages, so that's like your next best action or your next best experience. So something you want the customer to see or to know or to feel or to do. Usually that's where we as marketers put in our creativity. That's what we craft. So we do the video, short video for TikTok, or we do
the podcast, right?
Yeah, or the email copy, or the small video clip that will lead people towards looking at the podcast. You know, our small selection of that. That would be the message. Whereas then you also have content feeds, which be the other part of the content. So content feeds are it's a term for the content that the marketers feed in, but they don't create. So it could be a product feeds. So you take in the product feeds. It's already created. They share the same characteristics and same properties. It could be news articles. It could be case studies. It could be open support cases. It could be user-generated content in the form of reviews or videos and, you know, all kinds of content that you feed in. And then you do a selection of it based on, you know, the insights that you have. So whom do we decide to show articles about sailing versus articles about mountaineering, if we're talking about, you know, outdoor apparel, for instance. And really the idea is to, for the most important moment of truth in the customer journey, you tie together all the insights together with the content in a beautiful knot where things meet up. And that's the tricky part. How do you tie this knot efficiently? Because, you know, or at least the male population or the male listeners who are listening to this, maybe some of them have tried tying their own bow tie, and it's actually kind of hard. And making it, you know, you don't want it to be too heavy on the inside part, because, I mean, you're going to a party, there's someone who knows everything but doesn't know how to speak. I mean, that's useless, right? Or you go to a party where someone is talking like crazy but not listening and not having any insights to talk from. That's also annoying. So you want to balance the insights with the content.
Okay, and you divide those like events or cases where you try to tie the knot in three streams. One is like paid media, one is the marketing automation, where we really react to the customer behavior, and one of them is the website. You were talking already about the product or content stream.
Yeah.
So can you share the details how this works for all the three streams?
Yeah. So I think worth mentioning is that if you become really good at personalization, and if you are mastering this at a strategic level, then you don't start with the three disciplines. Then you start by analyzing tying the bow tie on a channel agnostic level. But I see most companies start using, you know, at least some forms of personalization, either when they are working with their campaigns, as you just said, actually both on paid and owned media, and in their marketing automation, or when they are working on their website. So say that you are, you know, an e-commerce manager and you want to work with personalization. Then obviously you'll be deploying personalization for the e-commerce website because that's your area of responsibility. Or if you are working with campaigns and you want to make those more efficient, at some point it makes sense to start, and quite early it makes sense to deploy some kind of personalization. I would say that even within advertising, with a very broad definition of personalization, you can almost not place an ad without having, you know, decided which segments to show it to, which audiences to buy exposure from. And within marketing automation, if you get the timing right, that's almost an act of personalization in itself. So those are the three disciplines, and that's where people normally start with their personalization efforts. And for for website owners or e-commerce owners, it will quite often be, you know, product recommendation engines that you'll be deploying. And the danger is then that because you are maybe doing well with your product recommendations, that you think now you covered all things personalization. And then suddenly you meet someone who is working with personalizing the campaigns. And then you'll be, but you're working with the wrong kind of personalization, because I'm working with personalization, the right form of personalization. I'm working with product recommendations. Then you have an argument within marketing, which is not beneficial for getting taken serious at the grown-ups table with the CEO and stuff. Because then suddenly you have marketers arguing among themselves about who has sort of the right form of personalization. And that's leading us nowhere.
So both of them should be in place.
Yeah. I mean, I think ideally you would... In the ideal world, you get a buy-in from top management and you could approach things top-down. And you could do this on a general level once and for all that would then be deployed at an omnichannel level. It's rarely the case, though. So quite often you need to start bottom-up and you need to start in the three disciplines. So start seeing how personalization works in campaigns, start seeing how personalization works on your website and so on. And then at some point, then they meet together. I mean, as soon as you become advanced enough, then you realize, oh, boy, we're working with the same segments in all three disciplines, and we're also working with the same messages. So why don't we combine this at an omnichannel level?
Okay. On the other hand, if I'm able to do the personalization on my website, if I'm able to do some kind of personalization with my, for example, PPC ads, how do I effectively connect all the data? Because I want to identify those... persons who take certain actions.
Yeah. So luckily, we've had a lot of help from the CDP category within MarTech.
So a customer data platform.
Yeah,
right.
So a customer data platform is definitely a way of unifying the way that you are collecting and connecting and cleansing your data. So mixing data from unknown web visitors and stitching that together with, as soon as someone becomes a known customer or visitor, stitching that together with their whole, you know, purchase history or whatever you had on them. So there's technology in place to help you do that. So that may be interesting, especially if you have a lot of unknown visitors. I mean, some clients don't have a lot of unknowns. They generally know all. Everybody is, if you have a login and that's persistent and everybody's locked in and you have a really big customer loyalty club, then maybe you don't need a big CDP, or maybe you do. That's up to you. So that's one way of putting that together. So that will help you steer sort of the segment, sort of the insights part of the bow tie. And then what becomes tricky is then, you know, tying it together with the content. And that's not quite as uniform yet as I think it will be. And that's what I think will happen in the future. We can maybe get back to that. So because then you need to tie one bow tie sort of for the website. And it may be building on the same, you know, so you have the same insights, but then you have the content on the website, which is kind of an island. And then you have the content that resides in your marketing automation and in your email newsletters and so on. That's another island of content. And then you have the content that resides in your advertising systems. So in Google and Meta and any other platforms that you have. And so that hasn't completely come together, the content side, yet. But so basically right now you have to tie three bow ties. I mean, you can use the same insights and for the CDP, but the content you will need to tie it a few times. But it's better. I mean, the worst thing you can do is if you build every single segment and rule, segmentation rules and moment of truth rules, if you build every insight rule and every content into every channel. That's going
what do you mean by that?
That's going to be a nightmare. Yeah. So say that you have an email for like a welcome email. Let's just take a welcome email. So you have certain messages that you want to have that you want to get across in a welcome flow, for instance, for a new customer. And say that you are you're writing the messages directly into an email. Then you realize soon after that, we need to have this in different languages. Okay, so then you build extra emails, but in other languages, but with the same messaging. And then at some point you realize, oh, we're also sending text messages or push notifications, or we want to display the same messages to people when they are online during their trial period. Okay, so then you rebuild the logic, and then you rebuild the message and the content in these other systems as well. And then suddenly, if you're working, and then you then you have some customers, they already did these things that you're asking them to do in the welcome program. And so suddenly having built all this logic into the channel itself becomes very, very hard to manage, because you'll end up with like endless, more or less identical emails and flows and definitions of logic and so on. So that's where things become unscalable.
Okay, and what's the way out of that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's no silver bullet to tackling it all. But what you can do is that at least for your own media, so for instance, when you're working with like with email and push notifications and text messages or WhatsApp, or I mean, there you can at least reuse the messages. So you need to find also the right software where you can manage and create and control the messages at a channel agnostic level. And only the best marketing automation platforms can actually handle this.
Where do you see the future of personalization in, for example, 1 year, which is pretty short period, or can be, and 5 years? On the other hand, this could be a pretty long period in terms of
5 years, who knows?
tech development, like AI, etc.
Yeah. First of all, I think we'll be seeing more unification of how we handle content. So there's been a lot of talk about data and CDPs and data unification and having a data layer and a data lake and data management and CDPs. And that's not going away, but I think we'll see something similar happen to the content side of things. So you will be having a content layer with a content pipeline, and we'll be seeing different ways of creating what you could call master content and repurposing that into execution content, which is basically what you use for doing personalization.
Can you give me some example of that?
Yeah, so a content pipeline could be so you're building all your basic assets, your master content. That could be your product descriptions, that could be your news articles or your how-to articles or your white papers or your case studies and whatever. That's content that you probably wouldn't personalize. You might localize it, like for different countries and different languages, but you wouldn't personalize it. You wouldn't have, you know, tens of variants of a case study for each individual end prospect. That probably wouldn't be the case. So the master content is what you use for localization, and you probably have that in a headless format somewhere, so you can surface that on your website or in your mobile app. But you don't personalize your master content. Mm-hmm. That's where you need to sort of go over the fence into what I call execution content. So that would be your calls to action. Those would be your next best experiences. Those would be your offers. Those would be your value propositions and so on, where you present things in different ways. And that's the content that you use for personalization, that you then repurpose into the different segment variants or potentially the individual variants using Gen AI, or you repurpose it into different channel formats. So you have like the core message, but it's automatically or semi-automatically repurposed into, for instance, a text message or an email copy or an ad for that matter.
And this is the future in 1 year or in five?
That's a good question. I think this will probably take longer time. But I think it's going hand in hand with the development that we're seeing within Gen AI.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think most companies have played around with Gen AI as it is now. And you and I also had a conversation about this in the car here, that it's easy to get, you know, really impressed with, I can put in a few keywords and then suddenly I have a song, you know, and there's a song and it's about whatever topics I put in there, and it comes really fast. And it's fun, it's cute. And then you're like, okay, but can I use it for business really? Or is it just fun? I mean, cute, but then what? Because quite often, I mean, AI can help you generate bad stuff really fast. And it is amazing how fast it can help you create stuff that you could almost use, but quite often you cannot use it. Because when you look into the copy and when you go sort of into the seams of things, then quite often the text and the copy that the Gen AI makes, it does sound a bit like a stock photo looks, because that's what it's been trained upon.
Everything the same.
Yeah, so it's a bit iffy. And if you want to really make the Gen AI come up with something that's really good, then you need to be extremely good at prompting. And in order to be extremely good at prompting means that you basically need to be good at writing stuff yourself. So if you want to like have a really good photo, for instance, using Midjourney, you need to be, I mean, you can tell it to use all kinds of objectives and where the lighting comes from and which color scales use and blah, blah, blah. But in order for you to actually be able to do that prompt, you kind of need to be a photographer. So I'm not saying that there isn't any efficiency gains.
You need to craft what you are trying to do before using GenAI.
Exactly, yeah.
So what does it mean?
It's a big efficiency gain, but you still need the skills to do it. But what GenAI is really good for, though, is repurposing content. So say that you, for instance, it's also good for ideation. So you can say, okay, so we're trying to describe this kind of topic or whatever. What are the key points that we should address within this? Boom, boom, boom. ChatGPT will quickly give you an overview of that. You know. And then making that content unique and making that come from humans, that's something where you can probably get some quick drafts using GenAI, but you'd need to repurpose it in order to really make it stand out and to make it unique, something that doesn't look like a stock photo. And then you can definitely use GenAI to help you localize the content. You can even use it to, not only translate it, but really localize it. So if you have your product feeds, for instance, and you have, say that you have a description of, or you have a picture of like a set of cups, for instance, say that you're selling cups, and you want to localize that product description for use in Italy versus England or the UK, then you could be taking into account, you know, local customs such as, okay, so this would be used for drinking tea in the UK, but the same set will be used for drinking coffee in Italy, for instance, because there's a different cultures. So GenAI can definitely help produce those variants much faster. And for SEO purposes, I mean, text that no one is supposed to really read except machines, it's fantastic for that. But then when you come to the personalized stuff, then again, it can become a bit iffy because you don't want it to be off. You don't want like a small traffic accident in your emails where the text is a bit, you know, weird or, we're not talking about self-driving cars where people get hit by a truck and die. I mean, we can live maybe, depending on how, if you are about your brand, we can maybe live with an email that's a bit off.
And is this kind of personalization or leveraging the GenAI in personalization taking place already, or?
It is, yeah, some places, yeah. So we actually have some few clients with Agilic that are already leveraging it, using it to personalize the texts in abandoned basket emails, for instance. So looking into...
And using GenAI.
Exactly, yeah. So totally one-to-one personalization automated with GenAI. So depending on what product you left and who you are, it will generate a completely unique GenAI text or like description and subject line and whatever.
But then we are maybe back to the data quality and data governance and how we deal with all this stuff, you know, on the bottom line of the personalization, right?
Yeah, I think the data issues for handling abandoned basket emails is probably... I mean, that's probably doable. Most e-commerce companies have figured that out right now. So I think from this particular example, I think it's more a question of how you work as a brand and whether you can tolerate this sort of loss of brand control, because you cannot oversee every single individual email that goes out. So can you tolerate, can your brand take the potential damage?
So
that
how strong you are as a brand?
Yeah.
Is that the right question?
How strong you want to enforce brand guidelines and policies? Because really what you need to do is you need one AI to create all the different variants, but then you need another AI to govern that. So you're working with AI agents.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll not be overlooking all content, but an AI agent will. So can you train your AI agent, your brand police agent, well enough for you to trust that the agent is doing as good as you can? And... yeah, and I think it's and it's already happening, and I think that's where we will get, because you know mistakes happen in the real world as well. I mean, we as people. I mean, I think actually the title of the book "Hello First Name" refers to that, because I mean we all tried receiving an email where it said "Hello First Name" because humans also get it wrong once in a while. So,
which tools, data sets, or softwares do we need to use to be able to achieve such kind of personalization?
I think we already touched upon CDPs. So a CDP is definitely good for making sure that you can unify the access to data and you have one place to ask for a single customer record, for instance. or single customer view. And then you probably also need some kind of a data warehouse, a data lake, where you store like every single piece of data that you ever collected. So imagine the customer data warehouse being the hard disk and the CDP being the RAM, where you can quickly access whatever data.
So you still need some company like Agilake to provide a CD customer data platform, and you need some kind of Adastra business to deal with all the data issues, right? You cannot do that without one or another part of that.
Quite often you need an agency as well. So Agilic is a marketing automation platform, and obviously it's the world's best. But I mean,
of course, especially
for the ones who use it and who love it. So that's really, Agilic is very much about tying the bow tie for all outbound owned mm-hmm. media channels. So it's the, for me at least, it's a very good choice for how you combine and reuse and have very high efficiency when you're operating with the complexity of multi-domain, multi-brand, multi-language, multi-channel communications, and you want to set that up in an automated fashion. So in order to not, as we mentioned before, tie the bow tie in too many places, this is probably the one bow tie that is really, really good at tying it for outbound owned media. And then you might need another engine for making website personalization as good as you like it, and maybe a third one for how you work with your paid media.
My very last question. Is there anything about the personalization that scares you?
Not really. I don't, depends. I think one of the perspectives that I see is... so we're going quite deep here, but... You know, at a personal level, and if you think about who you want to become as a human being, and then you ask yourself, is the marketing that I'm receiving, is that generally helping me become the better version of myself, or is it not? And it will probably be, sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. Because, I mean, the big advertising platforms, they are trying to figure out what you're interested in, and they'll be giving you more of that. But if you are, say, in a situation where you are more inclined to, making the wrong choices, drink too much or smoke too much or gamble too much or whatever your poison is, then you could also see the digital advertising platforms actually enforcing that or making that happen even more. You'll be exposed to more of that stuff. So that can kind of scare me. And I think at some point consumers need to take back the power on how they are exposing themselves to digital channels and paid media. So for instance, how much are we really interested in using our phone? And how much are we in fact using it? How much doom scrolling are we doing on Instagram, watching videos that are just making us more and more dumb? That's not what we want, but yet we're still doing it. So that scares me a bit. How can we take back the power so we can, as individuals, harness the digital tools to make, how can we harness the digital ecosystem to become the better versions of ourselves that we want to be? That's where I would like to see personalization get to. But that's a thing that needs to come from the consumer side of things and not from the big tech companies, I think.
This was Rasmus Holin, Chief Experience Officer at Agilic. Rasmus, thank you for sharing your insights and coming to the interview.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Follow the Adastra Digital website on LinkedIn, Facebook, and most importantly, subscribe to this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Google. This is Iva Karhanová from Adastra, signing off.